Hey, this is Dennis from WebEx. Today's podcast is brought to you by Ross Johnson. I am not on it. He is going solo with his own WebEx podcast. And there was a slight mix-up with the numbering. He says it's going to be episode 42, but it's really episode 43. We're doing three pretty much right in a row here. The other thing I just wanted to add was that we will be getting back to doing more a little shorter podcasts that are more technical and task based rather than the interviews and stuff. So be on the lookout for that.
Welcome to WebEx, practical web accessibility tips.
Welcome to WebEx, episode 42, Progressive Enhancement. I am your host, Ross Johnson, and Dennis is not here today. He gave me the opportunity to do a podcast by myself, and I, of course, took it because I have nothing better to do. Or it might be because I'm a super geek, or maybe I just like to hear myself talk. Or maybe all three. So, bad jokes aside, we've got a couple news and announcements. First, the announcement, we had a Refresh Detroit meeting yesterday, and we had one listener actually stop by, so that's great. So any other listeners in the area, please definitely stop by. They all go really well. We heard about content management systems, and there's a lot of good information. I mean, even after the presentation, a lot of people talked about different content management systems and solutions that they've used, and custom solutions versus open source versus box solutions, so... every time, there's a lot of great information. I encourage everybody to either tell their friends to come by or come by themselves. And then some news. The first one is SmileyCat.com has an article about the myth of the three-click rule. And I've read this all over the place, and I always assume there's kind of some sort of metrics to back it up, and maybe at one point there was, but he's arguing that the old saying that if your content's, you know, three clicks away from the home page, then nobody will find it, nobody will use it, and it just pretty much gets buried. And he's saying that that's not true, that, you know, people will find it as long as you have good, you know, breadcrumbs and information architecture. People will go as deep into your site as you want them to. So that's good to know, because it does open up a lot of options in information architecture when you're not having to worry about three clicks. And who knows if that was an arbitrary number or where that came about. The next one is at 456BereaStreet.com, where there's an article about how did you get into web accessibility. And it kind of talks about how the author got into accessibility. Even though he has good vision, he never knew anyone with any disabilities, he never had any himself. Kind of saying that what's interesting is he finds that inaccessible websites are hard for him to use, even though he's somebody who doesn't have any disabilities. And I find that's true. Especially, you know, some people have vision issues where it's not even a vision problem, but black backgrounds and light text is hard to read. Sometimes you're on a mobile device, and even though the mobile device is up to snuff, it's much harder to read if you're trying to visit some sites that don't care about accessibility. So it's a good read. There's a lot of interesting stories there, and I encourage everybody to go and comment and read the comments. And then the last one, this is not so much accessibility related, but it is usability related, and we find that those kind of intertwine. Boag World did a podcast on tagging, which is pretty interesting. It's just kind of a whole new way to organize information on the web, and it really makes you wonder how accessible is tagging. And I've never had the opportunity to use JAWS on a site that is heavily tag based, but I kind of wonder how easy it would be. Maybe it would be easier, maybe it would be harder. I'm not sure that I know. So to start the show, this is a guide on progressive enhancement, and I guess I should probably start because not everybody might know what that means. So progressive enhancement's the philosophy that the content should be of a website should be accessible at the lowest common denominator. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about accessibility, thinking that okay, if your site's accessible, then it looks like crap, and you can't do anything, and you can't have any of this cool stuff. And progressive enhancement kind of aims to address that issue and say, hey, yes, you can. You just have to do it right. So the idea is that, sure, it still works in a text browser, but as technology improves, as your computer, you know, the user's computer improves, as the technology that it supports improves, so does the website. So it progressively gets enhanced. So that way everybody can access your content regardless of device, technology, or disabilities, and you can still use all the cool user experience, you know, bells and whistles that everybody wants to throw in there just because they can. So what I find works best is I like to start with kind of a ground-up plan of what browsers and technology I want to support. I'm sure everybody kind of has a different method, but I find that planning is usually a great way to start, just so you don't overlook anything. And so what I might do is say, all right, so at the very minimum, I want to support a text browser. A text browser should be able to go through the site, you should be able to get the content, you should be able to read it. And I know a lot of people probably think, how many people really use a text browser nowadays other than maybe a mobile phone and, you know, a WAP device? And I'm here to say that it wasn't that long ago that I still used text browsers, because I did IT consulting. There were so many times that I was doing a scan disk or defrag or some arbitrary thing, and I didn't want it to look like I was browsing the web, but I wanted to browse the web. So I downloaded links, and off I went on the text browser. So make your site accessible so I can slack off. Thank you. Number two, after that I would say, yeah, I want a speech browser to be able to use it. That's important to me. And many people think, okay, well, if it works on a text browser, it should work on a speech browser. But that's not necessarily true, because there is kind of a whole different interface and interaction between the two. So you kind of want to differentiate them. After that, I would probably say, hey, I want it to work on a mobile browser. And that's not to say it looks perfect on the mobile browser, but you should at least be able to access the content. And then I might think about there, okay, what about a browser that doesn't support CSS at all, doesn't support standards? You may or may not want to support that. But usually, if you support a text browser, you know, an old version of IE3 or whatnot will still work and still be readable. Then maybe a non-standard browser such as IE5, 5.5, or 6, basically saying that, okay, it supports CSS, just not very well. And not only are they using these old versions of IE, but they also have JavaScript turned off, because a lot of these problems with these older browsers can be patched using JavaScript, but not everybody has it turned on. So a step up from that would be, again, a non-standard browser, IE5, 5.5, or 6, but they do have JavaScript turned on. Then maybe a standard support browser that doesn't have JavaScript turned off, because some people choose to browse without JavaScript even though they have the latest version of IE, or they use Firefox or Opera. And then finally, all the bells and whistles, it's a fully standard supporting browser, and it has JavaScript. So after you kind of plan it all out, and I've got my list here, you have to kind of address what you need to install and consider and configure in order to support each item. So for a text browser, pretty much all you have to do is have semantic XHTML. And everybody should really be doing this regardless, so this is an easy one. Obviously, I mean, frames make it harder, tables make it harder, so just keep everything nice and semantic and accessible. I mean, it's so much easier to kind of click down than try and tab through frame cells, so that makes a big difference. To move up to a speech browser, now this gets pretty tricky, because now you have to look into the whole set of accessibility guidelines and tools and methods, but it's not all that much harder, and it will help with the lower denominators too, so you might want to look at using skip links and make sure that you use access keys, or look at tab order, that sort of thing. I mean, there's tons and tons of stuff that you can do. You definitely want to use alt text, but you want to make sure that your site can be used in a good way with a speech browser such as JAWS. So for a mobile browser, there's a whole lot you can do. A lot of people choose to do nothing, and that does work, but that's a lot easier if you have a mobile style sheet. I mean, even just turning off unnecessary columns or making sure that they're in line so there's not excessive scrolling, that can help. You might want to do a mobile alternative page. There's kind of an ongoing debate about whether you should do a mobile alternative page or not, and I think you should, because most people browsing the average site on a mobile device are doing it for a reason, looking for directions or maybe for specific information. I mean, if I have the option, I'm sitting at home, I'm not going to go for my cell phone over my laptop. So, but that's up to you. So now looking at kind of the different browsers, to kind of give an example of when you might want to do this, readability and browser dimension and kind of site size is kind of an ongoing topic, and a lot of people say that the ultimate solution is just to use a liquid site, and I agree. But the only problem is there's these older browsers, namely IE, that don't support the max width function, which basically caps it so that your site will stretch, but it won't get any wider than a certain amount. And that's important because as lines get longer, they get harder to read. I mean, it's easier to lose your place when you're trying to go from one line to the next. So you want to make sure that they're not too far. And IE doesn't support this. So in this hypothetical situation, let's say we have maybe some AJAX content, and the two main things are AJAX and maybe we have some DOM tabs, which is basically you can click through different tabs and it'll hide and show divs. Kind of a nice usability thing. You don't have to load a new page each time, and that the site is liquid. So on a non-standard browser with JavaScript turned off, you would want to use conditional comments, which is a method that you can assign style sheets or JavaScript to specific browsers. So I could say in this instance, okay, the main CSS file is going to have the site be liquid. It'll be able to stretch as the browser window gets bigger. But for IE 5, 5.5, and 6, I would specify a separate CSS file. And that CSS file would make sure that the site is a fixed width and it would support 800 by 600 resolution, because that's the lowest resolution I choose to support for a semi-standard browser like IE 5, 5.5, or 6. So what will happen is if somebody comes to the site with one of those browsers, they don't have JavaScript, they do have some CSS support, it'll be a fixed width, and it's much easier to read a small fixed width site on a large monitor than a humongous lines running all across the page on a large monitor. Then we look at, well, what if these browsers had JavaScript? Well, there's a JavaScript file that allows you to enable, kind of emulate the max width ability. So what you would do here is use the JavaScript not only to emulate that, but also to load another style sheet that would take off or override that previous fixed width for the page container and set that to the max width. And that way, if you do have JavaScript, you do have IE6, it will stretch, but it will be capped off at the point where everything's still readable. And that's something that you specify yourself. So then you move on to maybe a non-standard browser, or no, a standard browser, but they don't have JavaScript turned on. Well, that's an instance where you want to make sure that, okay, if you're using AJAX, it should still work without AJAX. So if you're loading, you know, pages into a div, that link should still work. You should still be able to access that content one way or another. And, I mean, try and make it degrade as nice as possible. Obviously, you don't want to have it go to a page that's just bare HTML if you can avoid it. And if you're using DOM tabs, which are something that are hiding and showing divs as you click through the different tabs, you want to make sure that by default those are visible. When the JavaScript loads, if it loads, that's when it starts hiding them. That way, if you don't have JavaScript turned on, you can still read everything, they're still visible. It's just not quite as nice or cool. You have to do some more scrolling and there's some tabs that don't work, but it's much better to do it that way. And then you get to the point where you have a standards browser with JavaScript and you can do all the bells and whistles. Your AJAX works, your DOM tab works. It can stretch, but it doesn't stretch too long, and you should be good to go. So that's kind of the basic rundown on how to do progressive enhancement and why you should do it. I mean, there's really, once you get into the habit of doing it, you start doing it kind of by default. And it really doesn't take all that much more time. And to be able to tell clients or to be able to tell your boss that, hey, look at this wide range of different possibilities of users that I covered, and it really didn't take me any more time, I mean, that's really a benefit not only for yourself in terms of recognition, because we all like to be self-serving from here and there, Or from the company's or organization's standpoint, where, you know, they are now catering to this huge long list of audiences. And there's a lot of instances when you wouldn't think maybe somebody won't go to my site on a mobile, maybe they won't print it, maybe they won't go on a text browser, but I guarantee you some people do. I mean, these were instances where I didn't want to look like I was browsing the web. Hey, I was using a text browser. So, progressive enhancement, you should do it. It's not that hard. Just plan, figure out what you need to do, and make sure that the technology enhances it, and it isn't just there by default. So, you should be good to go. My name's Ross Johnson. Thanks for listening, and catch us next time.
The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com, webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAx at webax@gmail.com, webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls, www.checkengineusa.com.